Welcome to Inspirational Tales. When my guests on this podcast experience the most challenging times of their lives, they use these hardships to learn, grow, and better themselves. And as a result, they are now thriving in life. Their stories are ones of resilience, strength, and overcoming adversity. So sit back and join me as we celebrate them turning their challenges into triumphs. My guest on this episode is Danielle Snelling. Danielle co-founded Motherless Daughters Australia after her mum died from a rare form of cancer when Danielle was only 23 years old. Motherless Daughters is a not-for-profit organisation that informs, supports and connects women and girls whose mums have died. In this interview, Danielle speaks openly about her mum's battle with cancer and the changing dynamic within her family during this time. She shares how she felt there was a lack of support for her following her mum's passing and how this led to her co-founding Motherless Daughters Australia. She also shares some insights into what we can do to support someone who has lost their mum and how to navigate events like Mother's Day. This was a really beautiful and heartfelt interview, and I really hope that you learn and get as much out of it as I did. Hi, Danielle. Thank you so much for joining me on the show today. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you so much for having me.
Not a problem at all. So I normally like to start my interviews right back at the beginning. So if you could take us back to your childhood and growing up in your family and tell us a bit about what you were like and what your family dynamic was like growing up.
Yeah, I grew up in a small seaside town, so with the beach right at our doorstep. I was an only child for 9 years before my brother came along, so I developed a really close relationship with my mum, probably an anxious attachment, actually. I was one of those kids that I went off to school and I would cry and when she would leave. So probably really annoying for the teachers because I'm a teacher and I know what that looks like now from the other side. But yeah, I had a lovely upbringing and childhood and great relationship with my mum until Dean came along and I got very jealous. And I remember when he was born, I was dirty on that because, you know, the attention wasn't on me as a young 9-year-old girl, having had mum and dad all to myself for 9 years. And I remember mum bought me a little pair of earrings, a little dangly pair of earrings with little hearts on them. So that's something, I don't know, it's something that really sticks in my memory as a way that she made me feel like I was still important, I guess. Yeah, I've got really lovely memories of my upbringing.
Do you still have those earrings?
Yeah, I do. We moved house and I kind of packed them away and I haven't gotten them out since, but I still have them.
Oh, it's lovely. And being 9 years old, I guess you would have understood everything that was going on too with having a little brother.
Yes. Yeah, as I said, the attention wasn't all on me. So that was, yeah, I used to hate him. Like I used to just, that's awful because now he's like everything to me and he's my person and nobody touch him. But yeah, I think I just looked at him with, I was jealous that, you know, he was taking up some of my time with mum.
Yeah. So what was your mum like?
Mum was Italian and she was just, when I think of the word mum and everything that means, I feel like she really fit what that perception of mum is to so many. She was a great cook. She just always made really nice things for dinner. I remember, if I'd be coming home on the bus from school or if I'd be driving home from uni, I would message her and I would say, please, I really feel like a salad sandwich. Can you please have one waiting for me when I get home? Or can you please make me some toast with Nutella when I get home from school? And this is when mobile phones came in, so I was in year 11 or 12. Yeah, like she was just great. She was, yeah, everything I could have hoped for in a mum and so much more.
So how old were you when your mum became unwell?
I had just turned 21.
Okay, and can you take us through what happened?
Yeah, I had my 21st birthday in December and she had like abdominal pains at the time and like we kind of just put it down to menopause. And then she started to develop some bleeding and again, like menopause, maybe your periods kind of coming and going during that time.
Mm-hmm.
And then it got worse. And so we went to, well, she started to go to the doctors, and, they, it's actually really disappointing because it was just, she was sent away when it should have been investigated more at the time. And I guess any woman with postmenopausal bleeding really needs investigating and looking into what's going on. And the system definitely failed her at the time. And as that progressed over 3 or so months, the bleeding got worse, the bloating got worse. And, it wasn't until that point where she had to go in and say, "I feel like I can feel something growing inside me," that they sent her for a scan, which revealed a very rare form of cancer that had started in her fibroid in her uterus. And by that stage, when, they finally listened to her, because prior to that, she was sent, go home and take Panadeine Forte. "Oh, you've pulled a muscle. Oh, you've done this, you've done that. Come back if it doesn't clear up." So yeah, by the time she went and had the scan, it had grown outside of the fibroid, and had spread to her lungs. So perhaps had we have had that scan sooner, it might have been contained to the fibroid.
So they hadn't done any tests or anything. They were just sending
No.
her away.
Yeah, pretty much.
I have a lot to say
Disappointing.
about that, but I'm not going to.
Yeah.
I think, unfortunately, it does happen quite a bit in different things. And I think that you really do have to be an advocate for your own health, really, like a lot. I've had to do it myself, and it's unfortunate sometimes.
Absolutely. And I think this notion of, "Oh, it's rare," or, "Oh, but you're not old enough to have this," or, "Oh, but that doesn't, like, who cares? Just because something's rare doesn't mean can't happen. It means it's rare, but it doesn't mean it's not going to happen to you." And it was just really, it was disappointing. And essentially, it was, took her life.
How did you deal with that, knowing that they hadn't looked into it extensively beforehand and that it did get to that stage? How did you deal and cope with that?
There was lots and lots of anger. Like, we were both really angry. So, as I said, I was 21 at the time, and I've always been really timid and shy. But because she was getting turned away so many times, that really created a lot of anxiety in me because I was so attached to her, and like, her, it was life or death. Like, when you hear somebody's got cancer, we always assume worst case scenario until we figure out more about what their case looks like. But for Mum, it was, yeah, we were just really angered by it. And we had to push for the CT scan, even, and it was because I went in there and I said, "This has gone on for long enough. Like, she's passing huge clots, and that's not normal. Like, write a bloody referral for a CT scan." And I couldn't believe that it had to get to that, for something to be done. And it's been 10 years now since she died, but I spent a lot of time, what if, what if I had done this? What if I had spoken up sooner? Should I have done this? Should we have done that? And I guess at the time, we didn't have time to kind of cope or manage the anger. It was like, well, what now? Now it's surgery, it's a hysterectomy, now it's chemo, now it's radiation, so get the ball moving to so that she can live. It wasn't really till after she died that I kind of went on a rampage to change the definitions of uterine fibroids, because she was told for many years that fibroids are always benign and they can never turn cancerous, and that's not true.
Okay. So during this time, how did the dynamic of your family change?
Yeah, my brother was 12 when she was diagnosed, and he just started year 7. So, huge milestone time for him. And it all happened at the start of the year. Like, she was diagnosed in March, and I was still at uni. So, given that we're 2 hours from Melbourne, it kind of made sense that I would take Mum to and from her appointments and chemo, and Dad would stay back to keep Dean's life a bit more settled and some normality there. So we would be away every 3 weeks for 3 nights, and then You know, we had to be really careful with who came and visited, with the low immunity after chemo and that type of thing. But that was really hard, not living close to Melbourne and having to travel. And then, of course, like the worry of what if something went wrong in between being at Peter Mac in Melbourne for chemo and being at home, like the hospital's 2 hours away. So I guess it was just a time of, yeah, time that was filled with so much anxiety and uncertainty that made it really hard.
I can only imagine. So when your mum did pass away, you'd obviously spent so much time with her and immersed in trying to help her, take her to her treatments and all of that. When she did pass away, what were those initial moments like? So, you know, your initial days, weeks after her passing.
It's a bit of a blur now, but I remember I had a boyfriend at the time and he was just a shitty guy. Like, we were both young. You know, I was 23 and he was 23, and there was lots of immaturity there. I can, you know, look back now and I can see that. But I think I really latched on to him as an escape. Where I could live in denial and where I didn't have to accept or realize every day that my mum was dead. He lived in Melbourne, so I escaped there every weekend where I could imagine my mum at home in the kitchen cooking or, you know, out hanging out the washing or doing the things that she used to do, in an environment where I could be separate to her home. And I think that he was my escape. So I probably didn't really deal with it very well at all, looking back. Like, that's a terrible way to deal with it. About 6 months after, we were the type that would break up and get back together again. But yeah, after about 6 months to a year, that relationship ended and I just focused on my brother. Like, I had to be there for him. He's 9 years younger than me. And to get him through school and VCE. And yeah, I very quickly became like a mother figure to him. And that probably prevented me from dealing with the grief as well, because I could channel my focus and energy into something else.
So when do you think that you started to deal with the grief?
Oh, look, probably not until at least 5 years ago.
So 5 years after she passed away.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, you always deal with it, but I think there's a difference between accepting and being in denial or dealing with it versus dealing with it well.
Yeah.
And there's no right or wrong. I mean, I say to people all the time, the shock will carry you through. And I honestly think I lived in shock for a very long time, which then, you know, spurred into a denial phase and if I escape, it means it's not real and all that type of thing. But yeah, I don't think it was until 5 years later where I kind of, and it still happens now, like, but I had, you know, this overwhelming realization that, oh wow, like, she's actually dead. Like, she really is not here and she's never coming back.
And how did that feel, realizing that?
I think, like, you already know, but well, you definitely already know, but when you really know, like, it's awful and it's so hard to go to that place because, like, it's hard. It's hard not having your mum, being a young woman and not having your mum. And for so many people, their mum is like their number one support. You know, for a lot of people, that's not the case, but usually, you know, it's mum is the number one cheer fan, cheer squad, and to not have that. I mean, it's so much more for me than just losing a mum. Like, that realization was, oh, I don't have her advice. Like, it's not the fact that she's gone. It's everything that comes with having her that I no longer had.
And the dynamic, I guess, is different with a daughter and her mum because you still had your father and your brother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you talk a bit about how that's different?
Oh, look, it's just very, very different. I'm not sure that I could probably articulate it well enough or do it justice in terms of explaining the differences, but I think for a daughter and her mum, like, there is that bond that's just kind of intrinsically there from birth. Like, you grow inside your mum, and there's that bond that you can't really explain. Like, it's just, and dad, well, you know, dads are great, but dads don't give you what mums give you. Like, mums have, some dads do, I'm sure, but I think more often than not, and particularly the women I talk to, and I can talk a little bit about this later, but just to touch on it now, you know, with our community of women, we do this thing called grief confessions on Instagram, and it's all completely anonymous, and like, some overwhelming number, close to 800 women said, you know, I feel really bad about saying this, but I kind of wish, if I had the choice, I wouldn't wish that mum died. I wish that kind of dad did instead, because I feel that'd be easier to live with than, you know, life without mum. And it's not to say that dads aren't as important or anything like that, but I just think as women, that relationship with our mum is just so unique, and so it's just really hard to not have that. And the void is huge.
So when did you decide to reach out and try and find someone else? Because at this stage, you didn't know, did you have anyone around you that was in a similar position to you?
No, I didn't know anybody. And at mum's funeral, I mean, the Italian community or the European community, like, you get anybody and everybody at that funeral, whether they saw your mum 2 days ago, 2 years ago, or 20 years ago. And I have my own thoughts on that. And I actually think that can be quite disrespectful, especially when you have people you don't even know coming up to you and hugging you on the day. I think that's probably not appropriate for me. But I, you know, I had ladies I'd never met coming up to me on that day saying, oh, I know how you feel. My mum died, you know, recently. And I'm like, but you're in your 70s. You don't know how I feel. And losing a mum at any age is really hard, whether you've had her a long time or not. But, I mean, I was 23 and I was yet to face, I didn't even know who I bloody was, like, let alone ready to not have my mum in my life. I mean, that woman had no idea how I was feeling, or, you know, all of the milestones I was yet to face without my mum being there. She had experienced all of that with her mum, so very, very different. So I would have people saying that to me, and it used to really, really annoy me. And I had other friends who would say, oh, but it's been a year, you know, aren't you over it yet? Or aren't you, you know, oh, but isn't it getting any easier? But it's been 5 years now, surely it must. And I just think, what the hell are you even doing still talking to me? Like, you don't say that to anybody. And it just really highlighted how uneducated people were, and that we as a society have no idea how to do grief, and that we don't understand grief. And I felt really lost and isolated. So it was 2 years after, sorry, no, it wasn't. It was a year and a half after mum died that I could identify and realize I needed somebody who knew what I felt. And that's when I just reached out in a grief support group on Facebook and said, is anyone from Australia here who has lost their mum?
And what happened?
And Eloise, thank God, Eloise wrote back to me or commented on my post. And I was actually very specific, though. I said, you know, hi, my name's Danielle. I'm 24, I was. My mum died last year. Is there anyone here who is in Melbourne and who also has brothers? Because I wanted them to have a brother so I could really identify. Yeah, and she got back to me, and it was just, she's the best thing ever. Like, she's my person. She's The first time I met her, I can't even explain the relief and understanding that I gained from her. It was honestly life-changing for me.
So she's actually the co-founder of Motherless Daughters with you. Can you take us through how Motherless Daughters came about?
Yeah, so at the time that I realized I wanted somebody else in my shoes, I went searching for any resources in Australia who could help me with that. And aside from like grief counseling, I couldn't find anything. And I did see a grief counselor, but for me, it didn't help. It helped a little bit, but it only went so far. And so I knew that there was some sort of platform or support missing. And when I met Eloise, we met in a cafe and we were there for hours and hours on this day. And the joy we got from that cemented for me that this was what I needed to move forward and have that level of understanding in my life and support in my life. And I just thought, wow, like imagine, surely there's got to be more of us out there. Like, not everybody loses their mum when she's an old lady, like you're supposed to. Like, we know everybody has to die at some point, but we hope it's when they're old and in their sleep. So surely there's got to be somebody else out there who's lost their mum too early, like us. Yeah, we decided to start a support network and identified with the term motherless, so Motherless Daughters Australia, and here we are now. It was such a oh, we had no idea what we were doing. Like, we didn't even
Normally
know.
the case.
Oh, no idea. We knew what a not-for-profit charity was.
Good
That's
start.
just about all we knew. And yeah, set out and did some research and started to get our ducks in a row. And yeah, it's incredibly rewarding how many women we're now helping.
So, can you tell us what Motherless Daughters does?
Yes, so it is a charity that supports and connects women and girls whose mums have died. And we provide an array of support services from in-person events and virtual support, and fact sheets and advocacy resources for kids, and an online support group.
So, who do you cater for?
We cater for all women and girls and children, boys and girls, who lose their mum. And we just recognise and acknowledge that mother loss at any age is really challenging and heartbreaking, and that we know from our friendship and from chatting to other women that providing opportunities in a space for others in the same shoes to connect is incredibly therapeutic and beneficial.
Do you know how many women and girls you've helped up to this stage?
We know we've helped over 10,000. We've got a
Oh, wow.
community of over 10,000 women. But we also know that there's 3.7 million women in Australia who have lost their mum. And of those 3.7 million, 1.2 million of them experienced the loss of their mum before turning aged 44.
That's a lot.
Yeah, so I mean, yes, 10,000 is a huge number, but for us, we've got so much work to do to make sure we reach the millions of others who don't know about us.
Yeah, so you've obviously helped quite a lot of other people, but how has doing this helped you in your journey?
It's given me and Eloise, it's given us purpose and direction. It's something we can do every single day to honour our mums. Like, it's our mum's legacy. Not that we need a reminder to think of them, but it's something that we do to honour them and keep them alive while helping so many others. And yeah, it's the most rewarding thing I'll ever do. Like, teaching was rewarding, but in comparison with this, like, this is a whole new level of rewarding. And although, it sucks that this has come about because I don't have a mum, and I would give it all back to have her back for just 5 seconds. But it's something that I feel privileged to be able to do this, and that to know that you're helping people and that other people are appreciative and that you're potentially changing lives is, yeah, I could never put into words how much that's helped me.
That's fantastic to hear. I love that. So you touched on a bit before about how there's not much awareness and knowledge, I guess, around losing your mum or probably losing anybody that's close to you. In terms of how other people respond and react to you. So can you tell us if say I knew someone who had lost their mum or anyone really that was close to them, what could I do to help them and support them?
So I tell everybody, make sure you save in your calendar the date that they died and their birthday so that you have a reminder of those days and you can call or text or go and visit or take them out or offer to do something on those days with them. And I think ask about their mum, you know, or whoever it is that's died, like ask about them, encourage the storytelling, share memories you might have of that person. And to always remember and keep in mind that it's not your job to fix. Like you can't fix something like this. It's something that needs to be talked about. You know, we want to talk about the people who aren't here anymore and absolutely cherish those people who allow us to do that. I mean, it's really that simple. Save the important dates in your calendar. Be a good friend by acknowledging those dates. Don't shy away from them, or and don't worry about, don't think, oh, if I bring up their person, I'm going to make them upset. Like that person's always thinking about their dead person anyway. There's never a time when they're not. So you can never remind them that they no longer have a person in their life because they know every second of every day.
Yeah, I think that is a big part, not knowing what to say as well and not wanting to offend. And during that initial period too, so around the time of the funeral, like a lot of people send flowers and then I often think, you know, send flowers and then the flowers die and then kind of what happens. So around that initial period,
yeah,
what do you think is that, obviously there's no right answer here, but what is something, what are good things that you can do to be there for someone?
I'm going to start with something not to do.
Okay, yep.
Don't ask or say, if there's anything I can do, let me know, because that is not an invitation to somebody. Like, it's already in the too hard basket. Like,
okay.
Just do it. Just go and get food and drop it off. Just go and do a grocery shop of, like, non-perishables. Go and buy toilet paper. Like, I had a cousin pass away and he was really young. And again, we're Italian. So my cousin's house was full of people, like full. She ran out of toilet paper. Like if people were using toilet paper for tissues and obviously going to the toilet. And this really, really smart person just went and bought a whole lot of toilet paper. And it was just, you would never think to do that, but it was just like, it was the most amazing thing ever. Like, it's things like that. Just go and buy. I mean, don't go and buy a whole lot of toilet paper, but, you know, like necessities, tea, coffee, bread, things that can go in the freezer, some nice fruit, you know, just go and sit or text or call or, you know, but the is there anything I can do is really hard for a grieving person to answer in those early stages. I mean, especially if you're not a really close friend of that person, it's really hard to ask anybody to do anything for you at the best of times. And often when you're right in the thick of that grief, life's really busy because you're planning the funeral and that's really all you can focus on. It's more so after the funeral when everybody goes back to their lives and you see the same person go running by your house every day, or that everyone's just going about their life and their world hasn't stopped and yours has, that you really need people to continue coming and asking and just allowing, just to sit in it with you, like just to sit in the shit, I call it, really.
Now, we do also have Mother's Day coming up, which is obviously a big event around all of this. And like you say, not just Mother's Day, but any event that comes up where, you know, you join your family or birthdays, Christmas, whatever it might be. You have your Mother's Day, pre-Mother's Day high teas coming up in your network, which sound absolutely fantastic. But what are some things around Mother's Day? Like, can you talk a bit about that? And obviously it would affect people in this community.
So we've actually got an awareness week in the National Calendar of Events. And originally it was Motherless Daughters Awareness Week. And we've changed in the last couple of years to just Mother Loss Awareness Week. And it runs from the 1st to the 7th of May this year. The dates change every year depending on when Mother's Day is. But always in the week leading to Mother's Day. And it's just a week to recognise that not everybody has their mum to wake up on Mother's Day and give her breakfast in bed or head over for lunch or take her out. And it encourages businesses, you know, who are sending out Mother's Day promos and those types of things, to just be a little bit sensitive towards those who perhaps can't participate in that type of thing, or for whatever reason might really struggle with the day. So we've got that as a huge piece of awareness work that we're doing now from an organisation perspective.
Can I just ask that, is that new this year? Because I've seen quite a few of those emails this year, but I don't think I've seen any or many in previous years. Well, I'm presuming what you're talking about with your awareness work, where businesses are sending emails saying if you don't want to receive emails,
yeah, that's
you can
new.
Opt out.
That's
I
new
thought it was,
year.
I haven't seen any before this year. I've seen quite a few this year.
Yeah, so we, I would like to think that we've probably contributed to that, because last year and the year before we launched our MDA ambassador program, and we crafted a letter, an email response for women to copy and paste and send back to businesses that were promoting Mother's Day without an acknowledgement. And that gained enormous traction. So, you know, with people like The Body Shop and Arlo and Co., other businesses that, unless you're aware or you know somebody, you just don't think.
Mm-hmm.
I know I certainly didn't before Mum died. I mean, Mother's Day was fantastic. Like, celebrate your mum. You didn't really think of those that didn't have a mum. So I totally get it. But it's so nice to see this year that companies and businesses are empowering their database to make choices that benefit themselves and their mental health during this time.
Yeah, well, that's it. It's a choice, isn't it? They can choose to opt out or they can choose to get them. So,
yeah,
I think it's fantastic.
Mm.
So how can people find you and Motherless Daughters? I'll put your details in the show notes, but can you tell everybody how they can find you or how they can get involved if they want to?
Yeah, so our website is motherlessdaughters.com.au, or we are Motherless Daughters Australia on all social platforms with our purple logo.
And you've also got merchandise and stickers and things like jewellery, I saw as well.
Yeah, so we've partnered with Francesca for the month of April as an awareness piece. They've been incredibly supportive. They're donating $20 from the sale of one of their bracelets to us. We've got our stickers. So our Draw Her Wings symbol, which is part of our awareness campaign, the symbol was designed, I guess, well, informed and designed by our community, because they often refer to their mum's passing date as the day my mum grew her wings. So that's where
lovely.
That comes. Yeah, it's beautiful. And that's where that comes from. And it's our symbol that's specific to this time of year. So it's powerful and gains a whole lot of momentum. So we only pull the big guns out when we need to. And they're stickers for cars so that women can recognise each other out on the road. And we've had beautiful stories that have come from that. Just recently there was a lady who wrote into us and said she was at a shopping centre and she parked two cars down from a car with the wings on the back, and she hung around and waited Aww. For this person to come back. Anyway, the lady came back not long after and she introduced herself and they ended up going for a coffee and now they're friends.
Aww.
So really nice, you know, examples of camaraderie like that. And yeah, our merch, our t-shirts, we've been getting lots and lots of messages in the last 6 months asking for t-shirts, so we had to get the t-shirts.
One thing I have noticed is that often, I think it's across the board, when you're dealing with social media and things like that, there's often trolls, not so friendly people, but within your community, everyone seems to be so supportive, like so supportive.
Yeah, it's just our support group on Facebook is the most supportive, welcoming, non-judgmental thing, place, platform I've ever been involved in. Like, it's so beautiful. The support and love that these strangers have for each other is amazing. But one thing I will say about that is sometimes we do get comments or somebody will write in and it'll be in a nasty way. Like, I'm not sure we've had too many nice messages about this, but we'll often get, what about the boys?
Oh, okay.
And we totally get that and we totally understand. And Eloise and I, you know, have said on numerous occasions, like, we both have brothers who we love dearly. Like, I would walk over hot coals for my brother. He's everything to me. And we both asked them if they wanted to be involved, you know, when we first started. And their answer to us was, we miss and love our mum more than anything, but we can see that it's, for some reason, it's just different for you. And that, you know, they didn't want to be involved. So we respected that and we didn't push it. So as women, you know, we created something from a place of our understanding as women of what it's like to not have your mum. And that's not to say that it's, you know, less hard for the sons or anything like that at all. It's just at the end of the day, there were no resources at all. So we were proactive with our grief and we created something for women. And we're so happy to help anybody who wants to do something for the sons. Like, we're more than happy to help. You know, we can't be all things to everybody. We do have our journals for kids, boys and girls, and one day, you know, maybe when we've got a whole lot of support and we do what we do really well for women and girls, then perhaps we'll be in a position to branch out and help sons. But yeah, I mean, we can't do that without support from sons themselves. So yeah, I want to make the point really clear that we're not all about how important it is for women and how unimportant it is for men. It's not the case. It's just, we started this as women, as young women who had lost our mums.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. Mm. And there is always, like you said, an opportunity for someone else or a son.
Absolutely.
To do that. You just mentioned kids there, and I just want to touch on that a bit, because I think if you lose your mum as a kid, it would have such an impact. But kids can't speak for themselves. Oh, they can speak for themselves. It depends on how old they are. And as, like, the same as an adult can. So what happens with kids?
Yeah, kids, it's really important that when kids suffer a loss around them, that really direct language is used. Like, there's lots and lots of research that tells us, you know, lofty language such as, you know, they've gone away or we lost them or they've passed away can leave kids feeling really unsure of what's actually happened. And it's such an important time where education is critical. We had a lady, just to give you an example, we had a lady reach out to us. She's 65 now, but she was 7 when her mum died. And she, you know, her family said, oh, we lost mum yesterday. Like, you know, we lost her. And she thought she went missing. So she walked to the police station and went there and said, my mum's gone missing. We've lost her. Because nobody, you know, and she said, I couldn't understand. I didn't understand what had happened because direct language wasn't used with me. And lots of people shy away and think it's too confronting, but it's actually really, really important. And then providing opportunities for them to talk and discuss what their understanding is of what's happened is also critical. And that's where our journals are really important. They're full of writing prompts and opportunities for kids to, you know, like they've got conversation prompts. So if dad feels uncomfortable or doesn't know how to bring it up, or if the grandparents don't feel comfortable, these journals can really help initiate that conversation and also help with memory preservation and those types of things. But I think often we shield kids, and I used to see it when I was teaching. I mean, instead of addressing not everybody has a mum to go and buy for at the Mother's Day stall, it would just be swept under the carpet because it was, I don't know, maybe too hard to deal with, or I'm not sure. But kids should always be given the opportunity to discuss or express what they think is going on, and they can really only do that if they've got supportive adults around them who have given them the right tools and the right language and education to encourage those important conversations.
So what do you hope for the future for yourself and for motherless daughters?
Well, I'm not going to stop until those 3.7 million women know about us. That's really important, because every day we have women join our support group or come along to one of our events and say, "Where have you been? I can't believe I needed you 2 years ago, or I needed you 20 years ago." So my heart breaks for the ones that don't know about us and who are going to be lonely and isolated on Mother's Day, especially. You know, I hope that we're a long-term sustainable organization who can reach all women and girls and children in need of support, and that we can be a voice to educate society on the impacts of mother loss, because premature mother loss is profound, like women suicide because of it, and women are diagnosed with depression and anxiety and a loss of identity, and there's so many things that can happen as a result of premature mother loss that people aren't aware of. So we hope to be a voice, we hope to advocate for all of the women, and we hope to champion research in the space so that we can help improve practice, grief, support and an approach to helping women who have experienced mother loss to make their life a little brighter and make the load a little bit lighter.
And you do seem to be doing that. You seem to be growing quite quickly, which is wonderful for everyone. So I have one final question that I ask everyone at the end of my interviews. If you could go back in time and give your younger self one piece of advice, what would it be?
Oh, I think it would be, I never know how to word this. I just think it would be, you can do it. You are going to be okay. It is hard. And when you think you're not going to be okay, you nearly always are. And to really try and look after yourself, like not to put pressure on myself to so much do things that honor my mum all of the time. If there's things I need to do that I know she wouldn't agree with, but it would make me happy, I need to do that and not feel guilty about it just because she's not here. Because if she was here, I couldn't care less what she said. And I think, yeah, back, I know it's not when I was younger, but if I could give advice to myself at the time that she died, it would be, there's nothing worse than putting so much pressure on yourself just because a person has died. It's still important to do things even if she would disagree with them, because you have to make sure your life is hard enough, and it's important to do things that make you happy.
Yeah, and you have to keep living your own life, don't you?
That's right, yeah. And as hard as it is, don't worry about the judgment of other people. Like, it's really not important. It's very hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
But what other people think of you really is none of your business.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story and for creating and Motherless Daughters and all the work that you and Eloise are doing for the community. It's been fantastic to speak to you, and especially just before Mother's Day, with everyone that's going to be affected with that coming up. So thanks so much, Danielle. It's been fantastic.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Inspirational Tales. If you're enjoying the podcast, I'd love it if you could please share it with your family and friends so that we can inspire more people. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, please don't forget to leave us a rating or a review, and make sure that you have subscribed or followed the podcast on whichever platform that you are listening to it on so that you can stay up to date as new episodes are released. Thanks again, and I look forward to you joining me for the next episode of Inspirational Tales.